I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Krabeshni.
And welcome to Building with Builders,
our podcast where we believe that building is fun.
Super fun.
So much fun.
Build Her Collective was created to help women with building and renovating. And we believe that with the right tools, everyone can build. For us, it's all about encouraging women to take back control of the building process and really achieve their dreams.
We are women in the building industry, and as developers, builders, and project managers, it's our passion to share everything we know with other women doing the same. And that's why we've created this podcast for you.
So if you love all things building,
you're into design,
keen on the numbers,
about to renovate,
thinking and dreaming of that forever home and what it would look like,
or even developing for profit,
then you've found your family.
Subscribe to our podcast and follow our journey over at buildhercollective.com.au. Hi everyone, it's Krabeshni here, and I am talking to Steph O'Sullivan from Coal Lane House. Now, Steph graciously agreed to be one of our case studies in our book, and we are so delighted that she said yes to be on the podcast today. So welcome, Steph.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, Steph and I were just having a bit of a chat before the podcast started recording, and as you do, half an hour later, we're just about to start. But we were just reminiscing on the location of her house in Dublin. So it turns out that my sister-in-law used to live around that area. So I know it a little bit well, but I know it enough that I know I got lost in it. It's a really cool up and coming, I think very changing suburb. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's changed a lot even in the last few years since we've lived around here. So, yeah.
So when you first bought your site or you were looking for a property to build, did you decide or did you have in your mind that you wanted to do a modern take on a cottage, or how did that come about?
Well, we hadn't intended on building at all. We went looking at houses, just normal houses in and around Stony Batter, Glasnevin and Phibsborough. And we were renting in Phibsborough at the time, and we'd just moved back from London. And we had sold our property in London and made a decent profit. And so we had cash that we thought was going to serve us well. But unfortunately, the property market in Dublin is pretty tough. There isn't enough housing available for purchasing. And so there's huge demand, and it keeps hiking the prices up. We had bought and sold a number of properties in London, so we felt well equipped. But we were actually quite surprised at how difficult it was to buy in Dublin and what you got for your money. You know, so we had looked at a house one evening in Stony Batter. I still pass the house and I think about it, but it was a beautiful house. It had been chopped up into apartments, and so it needed quite a bit of work to bring it back as a home. And there was so many people queuing to see it. It had already had offers before we had even stepped inside the door, and we were very, you know, disheartened by the whole thing. So we got back in the car, we drove up the road home, and we went back online just to look at the property again, just to kind of get another feel for it. You know, when you come away from it, you want to go back and have a look at the plans and stuff. And when we went back into the estate agent's listings, we clicked on the commercial tab and this warehouse popped up, and I said, oh, did we come across this before? And Graham was, you know, because I actually did notice it before, but now that I see it again, it's pretty cool. And we noticed it was literally just 2 minutes up the road from the house we had just viewed. So we got back in the car, and I remember it was late, it was dark. Our two-year-old was supposed to be in bed definitely an hour previously. Got back in the car, drove up to the warehouse, and we said, this is the one. And the next day we rang the estate agent. She thought we were putting an offer in on the house we had seen. And we said, actually, we've just seen this warehouse. And she was so shocked. She was disgusted. And she's like, I mean, you're going to have to talk to my colleagues. That's a commercial unit. And we were like, brilliant. So long story short, we viewed it, put an offer in, paid cash for it. And that's kind of where it all started.
Did you have to get it rezoned to live in a commercial property in the location, or was it in a residential area?
So it was in a residential area and it was under a commercial category, but it's very straightforward to change from commercial to domestic. You just apply, you know, it's just a form and it's pretty straightforward. Now, in saying that, like, my husband is an architect, so he knew how to approach it, but in the grand scheme of things, it was painless. You know, it was pretty straightforward. Yeah.
Oh, well, you've just piqued my interest there on the grand scale of things. What was painful?
I suppose because it was unconventional and it's down a laneway that's probably the width of a transit van, and it's a dead end, and it's basically the back of all the houses along the Cabra Road, North Circular Road. It's the back of all those houses. It's their access to bring their cars into the back of their houses. So we knew logistically it was going to be challenging to do anything. But what happened was, because the warehouse came with a house, okay, this is going to sound nuts, right? So it was this warehouse on land, but on the corner before you went down the laneway, there was this small little semi-detached, what we called a cottage. So the houses on the road were your typical Victorian, beautiful red brick row of houses. And then at the very end, there was just this random kind of sore thumb, one-story semi-detached little unit. And we walked past it as we went down to look at the warehouse. And then the estate agent said, oh, by the way, that comes with it. And we were like, sorry? So this actual house comes with the land? And she said, yeah. I mean, it's tiny. I mean, she was really downplaying it. But for us coming from somewhere like London, where you saw how things could be done with such minimum space, we had been exposed to like anything's possible. So we saw huge potential in just that little unit alone. So even though we knew there was going to be a challenge with doing something with the warehouse in terms of logistics and planning, because you have something like 20 or 30 houses backing onto it, we knew it was a risk worth taking, because that little semi-detached cottage, we knew there was money in that. So it had never been lived in. It was always used as the office for the warehouse. So it's where all the leather goods were on display. So you would come in, pick your goods, and then, yeah, your shop front. And it was all clad on the inside with little pegboards. It was really cool. It had no proper bathroom or anything, because it was never used for that. It just had a loo outdoors, weird situation, pretty disgusting. But we knew that even if we couldn't get planning for turning the warehouse into a home, that we were paying so little for the land itself and this coming with it, that the value of turning that little unit into a home, and you'd probably, you know, we knew we'd only have to probably spend maybe 40,000 to 50,000 euro on it. We could get it to a home status and rent it out or sell it. And so it was all a risk worth taking. So that was the first thing, was like recognizing the challenges with doing whatever it was with that laneway, but understanding that we had something to fall back on, and we would at least get our money back. So Graham went immediately online to look at any previous planning applications for that land. He checked with a friend of his who's in Rhodes to talk about access. He did all the necessary checks. Then it just rolled into, you know, starting to design it. And the challenge there was Graham was working full time. I was working full time. So finding the time to do that. Then the challenge was going for planning and answering those questions and changing it. And then the next challenge was finding a builder. So, you know, it was a long process, difficult because of us working full time.
Well, I think in your case as well, you have an added challenge that it sounds like you guys also documented it. Now, most people will engage a draftsperson or an engineer or an architect to do the documentation and submit these documents to council for approval. So to actually have to sit down and document your entire home, it takes so many hours. Outside of making all the decisions that you have to make when you're designing a home, in any case, I can't imagine how you guys got through all that work with family as well.
Yeah, no,
it's a lot.
It was really challenging, and we didn't have times where we had arguments, you know, and it was, I mean, you're so tired. And Graham got it to the point where he could get it to planning, and then thankfully he agreed we needed someone to help with the drafting when it got to construction. So obviously he has a massive team where he works, and he just said, who wants to help me? One of the technicians said, I'll do it for X amount. And Graham said, great. And he gave him the drawings. He drew it up. There was a bit of to and froing, and that was a massive help. Now, we also hired a guy to go in and obviously survey the existing warehouse and the land so that we could draw from something. There's no way anybody can do that themselves. That has to be someone that is a professional in that area. You know, they need to do that properly and mark the drainage and anything like that. So where we needed it, we got it. But yeah, it was really challenging at first.
So tell me a little bit around the vision, because I think that, you know, it's a very modern home. I can see from the images how you've kind of used form to kind of meld into the, I guess, the urban context, without sounding too blah, blah, blah. Tell us a little bit around your vision of how you sort of saw it come to life. Did you have a form in mind, or did you work from your floor plan and sort of articulate it up?
Exactly. It was such a tight site that you really were informed quite, you know, quickly from day one. With the basic form, it was going to have to be, you have to tick all the boxes, you know, access in, access out, creating light, square footage. So this kind of U-shaped cigarette kind of form automatically happened, because we really wanted to use every square inch of the site. But, you know, we knew to get planning, we needed to have a front courtyard that would allow a car to turn. And we knew we needed to be able to bring light into the center of the house. So we knew we'd need some sort of internal courtyard. So as soon as you start to carve out both those things and still maximize the site, to be honest, you quite quickly had a shape. We weren't building in the middle of a field in the middle of nowhere. You know, you couldn't just pick a shape or a form. And also, we were very conscious of, we wanted to respond to that kind of industrial feel. At first, we thought we could actually work with the warehouse that was there. You know, there was this cool corner, that's what sold us, and we really wanted to try and retain that. Unfortunately, the warehouse turned to be more of a glorified cow shed. It had nothing. It was, when I talk about warehouses, I think sometimes people have images of, you know, a Clerkenwell London type warehouse vibe, which are stunningly beautiful and built beautifully. This was a really thrown together wasteland type warehouse with a cow shed roof, and which is what our solicitor said, you know, you're buying a cow shed. Yeah, we said, we have visions for this shed, don't you worry. And he thought we were completely bonkers. So yeah, it came from the form of that tight site and the fact we wanted to bring some sort of an industrial warehouse vibe to it.
Now, did you find a way to work in the shop front into the design, or did that end up going?
No, so the shop front house had been separated years ago. The owner sold the bit between the warehouse and the back of that house to the neighbour so that they had a bigger garden. So there was a cut off, you know, there isn't a connection between the two lands, but that's fine because we did it up straight away. We spent 40,000 on it and it's been rented out since. So it's, you know, we've had income from it since the day we bought it, really. And it's great. It's a little investment thing just there.
Well, isn't that amazing? So you buy something that you think is going to be your home, and then you also get a surprise investment property. Now, some of the internal finishes are really interesting in your home. Do you want to talk us through sort of the internal scheme and how you pulled it together?
Yeah, so it pretty much happened very organically. Graham had this idea of poured concrete. You know, we spoke about it and I said, well, I'm definitely on board with an industrial vibe and I love Japanese clean interiors and Scandi, and I like brutalist architecture. I love that kind of concrete. So I was fully on board with his direction and I totally understand where he was coming from. I had always been a massive reader of Louis Kahn architecture and things like that. So I had all these books that there was so much concrete architecture in. And I had seen the kind of finishes that work really well. So with raw concrete for, you know, softening it, it's always good to bring in rusty tones and kind of light blues and natural linens and things like that. So mid-century furniture sits perfectly within that palette. You know, you've always got that ready orange tonal variation going on, and it just, it, you know, it's a winner. It's a combination that always works. So we really didn't want to use a huge amount of different materials. We said, you know, what about like literally just exposing every single wall as concrete, and where we need to, we can, you know, clad the walls in plywood. We were trying to just stay away from plasterboarding, just standard approach of plasterboarding. Not that we don't like it, but we wanted to just do something that was, I suppose, just as calm as possible, because it's a lot of concrete. So it's like, how do you approach that? You're either all in or you're not.
So I can see you kind of went for the plywood in the bedrooms to sort of soften that up through those.
Yeah, we went with the plywood upstairs. So upstairs and downstairs have a really different feel to them. Upstairs gets a huge amount of light. And so we continued, all of downstairs is all exposed concrete, floors, ceilings, walls. And then it's kind of cut up with full height glazed walls. So it really breaks it up. Now the height makes a huge difference, because there's so much concrete, you really need to get that height in. And it's all a play on proportions. So the width was quite wide, so we couldn't have a standard ceiling height. We had to go up and make sure the proportions worked well. And also to get enough lighting, because we're so surrounded by houses. So we brought the concrete up the stairs and we poured a concrete floor upstairs. And then we did a concrete upstand to about 500 mil. And then the rest of the walls are plywood. And then we've a couple of walls that are plasterboard for practical reasons, you know, where the laundry room is and the bathroom is, all those walls. And it just balanced it off perfectly, you know, just to bring that lightness in.
Did you include any special heating? So did you use an in-slab hydronic heating, or did you go with hydronic panels?
Yeah, I mean, you probably call them different things over there. We went with the straightforward underfloor heating system downstairs, and a system called air to water. So it's electric. So we don't have any gas or oil. The system is all electric. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, very straightforward system. Radiators upstairs and underfloor system downstairs. So yeah, it's just the system's put in, and then the screed is poured, the concrete's poured over it. Works beautifully with concrete because it's such a good conductor of heat.
One of my questions that I'd planned on asking you was, you know, as a designer and as someone who's now going through the process of designing their own home, you know, it does have two different points of view, I suppose, when you're designing for someone else and then you're designing for yourself. But how have you found living in your own design? Is there anything that you look at and you think, I would change? Or are there moments that you experience and you think, that's exactly how I wanted it to be?
My office is probably the one room where I'm constantly rethinking it, because I spend so much time in it. We weren't planning on a pandemic, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Overturned and having to live in it and work in it as much as we found ourselves. So it's a hard one to answer, because I wasn't planning on this certain element of this lifestyle that we now are existing in, and we have it heavy here. We're still in lockdown a year on. We moved in the first day of lockdown, and now we're celebrating a year in the house and we're still in lockdown, and we're only a tiny bit through vaccinations. So every kind of time I've lived in this house has been under this guise of a very different life that we weren't planning on. So I'm so thankful for our house in the sense that we created something so calm, right? So the design decision I made to always question the flow of the house, less is more. Like, I kept questioning, do we really need that wall? You know, I forgot everything to do with how we've lived in homes previously and how we're accustomed to thinking about living. I questioned everything. I was like, why would we need a laundry room downstairs when everything that goes into the laundry room exists upstairs? So in Ireland, that's a big thing. Like, people can't understand why you don't have your laundry utility off your kitchen leading out the back door to hang the clothes out on the line. It's like, well, you know what? That's not how we live. And all those kind of big decisions have worked out really well. So I'm really pleased with those. There's a couple of things that we hadn't fully decided on. So we're living in it now, and I can see, okay, I know in a couple of years we're going to change the furniture to there. And I know that the office is now multifunctional. It's the gym, it's the play area, it's whatever it needs to be to get us through our days. And it's really made me see what I want and don't want and things like that. So overall, as the designer of the house, living in the house, it's been really successful. There's nothing I would change, but there was lots of things we hadn't fully decided on because we wanted to live in it as well. So I would say, you know, I found it very hard to make full 100% decisions on my own house. I can do it no problem for clients. When I came to my own house, I kind of said, let's just get it to this point, live in it, and see what happens. So it's a good and a bad thing, because part of it is I'll never get it done. And then the other part of me is like, well, why are we rushing? We don't have to rush into it. We've only been here a year and we've got the rest of our lives to think about how we want to live. And the kids will grow up, you know?
Well, I suppose that's it. The home is really just a fabric to how many times your family life is going to change. And I think COVID is just an example of how quickly socially and culturally things can change. And I think architecture and building has always been a reflection of that. I'll be interested to see now if there's a new style that's going to come out of this big world pandemic. Or I think that already people are looking at their home. And I was just talking to someone about this today. I think now we're looking at our home as being a workspace, a home space, a private space, a family space, a hobby space, but also a space where we can entertain and enjoy what we would normally have enjoyed out in the world.
Oh, it's definitely changing, and I'm really busy with inquiries from people. They just want to change their home. They're getting to live in it far more than they had ever lived in it before. So it's definitely changing the landscape of the home and how people want to live.
I kind of like that. I kind of think, you know, we spend so much money on our homes that why aren't we enjoying them more? Why aren't we using them more? If we were approaching a building from a commercial point of view, we would look at how do we activate every single space.
It's the thing I've been banging on my whole life, really, my whole professional life. When even though I worked in commercial for so long, anytime someone asked me for help with their home, you know, I used to just constantly say, think about it differently. Think about how you want to live in it. And there is a good that's coming out of this. It's the same as everything that came out of all the other things, the big things that happened throughout history after the war, how it changed how women saw their place in the home and how kitchen design changed. You know, that's really interesting stuff. And so this is how things changed. We're in the middle of something that is changing, how we approach our homes and design. And finally, people are really, really understanding the value of working with a professional that gets that.
I think that you sort of nailed it on the head as well. We're always talking to builders about figure out your values and figure out the way you want to live before you figure out the vision. Because ultimately, I think when you approach a project or your own renovation, people go straight to the imagery because there's so much of it. You kind of need to wind back. And I think that your point about the laundry is exactly on point. It's not the way that everyone lives. It's not typically the norm, but it's the way you live in your home and it suits your functions. And I think that we can be a little bit more bold, and I think we can be a bit more confident that there's people get so scared of doing the wrong thing, being too quirky or doing something that's going to affect their resale value. And I think that actually when you have a well-considered flow through your home, these decisions will come out of it, but they'll work because they work with the whole scenario together.
I totally, totally agree. I think the mindset of not doing something in their house because of the resale value, I think that's going. I think that mindset is going now.
Well, thank you so much for sharing so much about your journey and your insights. I wish that we were able to come over last April and we could have met and I could have gone through your home because it would have been the best. But hopefully when Keen and I get to Ireland, hopefully in the future and visit our family over there, we'll be able to pop in and have a cup of tea.
Oh, you're more than welcome. We'd love to have you. We'd love to have anybody.
COVID safe, of course.
Yeah.
COVID
by
safe.
Then, yeah, by the time you are allowed into our country.
It's probably not even a matter of getting into Ireland. It's a matter of being able to get back into Australia.
Well, this is it. You guys are even stricter, and rightly so. Yeah, no, we'd love to have you, and we'd love to go. We've always said we want to go to Australia.
You're welcome anytime.
Thanks for listening to Building with Build Her. We'd love for you to spread the word.
For show notes, links and downloads and other awesome resources and freebies, head to buildhercollective.com.au. And don't forget, that's Build Her with an H-E-R.
And if you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much to both of us if you could take a minute or two to leave a review.
And don't forget to subscribe so you can listen next time as we talk all things building and women making their mark in the building industry.